various local issues and organizations. It's co-hosted by Len Iaquinta, a nonprofit manager, fundraiser, and consultant, WGTD Walworth County correspondent Jim McClure, and by Linda Fleshinsky, a mother, grandmother, freelance writer, and former Racine School Board president. And now, here's today's host.
Good morning. This is Len Iaquinta for Community Matters, and our topic today is community activism, and we're going to talk about it from the perspective of Congregations United to Serve Humanity. And I have here with me two guests this morning, Dawn Ankeny, an organizer for CUSH, Congregations United to Serve Humanity, and the Reverend Eric David Carlson. He's the minister of Bradford Community Church, Unitarian Universalist, and he's the chair of the Religious Leaders Caucus of Congregations United to Serve Humanity. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, Len.
I'd like to start first by talking about what's in the news currently. We've been seeing a lot of notices, Dawn, about an immigration action that Congregations United to Serve Humanity is going to take on. I believe it's Monday, just coming up in a couple days, regarding the cost of zero tolerance. You want to tell us what's that about?
Sure. We have an immigration task force that works on this issue year-round, and they're very concerned about the children who are separated from their parents right now, and the collateral costs of the zero tolerance policy. So on Monday, July 2nd, at 6 o'clock, they'll be doing a gathering at Civic Center Park on Sheridan Road, and just talking about some of the costs factually and proposing some alternatives to detention.
Is this a new concern of Congregations United to Serve Humanity, or has immigration been on your agenda for some time now?
Immigration's been on our agenda for a long time.
And why is that? Why are the churches concerned about immigration?
Because, congregations are always concerned about all people. And there seems to be a feeling in our country now that some people aren't as valuable as others. And that goes against our faith values of the worth and dignity of all people.
Reverend Carlson, why don't you expand on that a little bit? Why is it that the religious leaders are so concerned about immigration in our community? Tell us a little bit about, so we understand what the importance of this is to our congregations.
Well, though we all come from different religious backgrounds, one of the things that we try and do in CUSH is to find those areas where we have common beliefs and common concerns. And basic human rights are pretty much a universal concern for all of our congregations. And the immigration crisis in this country and the inhumane practices of our government dealing with asylum seekers, especially families with children, is something that is of paramount importance to all of our institutions. And we find that working together as an interfaith group, we can be more effective for advocating for change in the world.
Now, you're the chair of something called the Religious Leaders Caucus of CUSH. You want to tell us what that position is? Now,
sure.
I know there's a board of directors of CUSH, and Reverend Kathleen Gloff is the president of that board. She's from Summers Community United Church of Christ. But this is and that's the board, which includes lay people, as I understand it. But you're the chair of the Religious Leaders Caucus. What does that mean?
Well, the board of CUSH is the elected leadership representing the different congregations. And the Religious Leaders Caucus is a kind of an advisory board made up of representatives, minister and clergy representatives of the member congregations who can help support the work of the CUSH board, help support the decisions and ground our stances in some religious and theological backing. So we find it's very helpful to have kind of an organizational leadership body in the board and also a moral and spiritual leadership body that works in conjunction with the board. And of course, that would be the Religious Leaders Caucus.
CUSH is a fairly large organization of congregations in the Kenosha area. How many congregations are involved, Dawn?
We have 16 member congregations representing. Right now, we have a Jewish temple, and the rest of them are different denominations of Christian or Unitarian Universalist congregations.
How long has CUSH been in existence here in Kenosha?
Since 1999, that's when it started to get organized. And in 2000, it was formalized.
One of the reasons why I wanted to invite Don Acne and Reverend Carlson to the program this morning is because as a news person, Cush has become of interest. It seems that every time an important issue pops up in the community, it's sort of like whack-a-mole. There's Cush, there's Cush, there's Cush. And you have a lot of interests. Reverend Carlson, tell us a little bit about the breadth of the interests of the Congregations United to Serve Humanity.
Well, we have a number of task forces that work on specific issues that involve Kenosians. We have the Immigration Task Force, of course, which is helping produce the action on Monday night. We have the Transportation Task Force that helps advocate for better public transportation for all of Kenosha's citizens. We have the Education Task Force, which looks at issues involving our public schools and access to education. We have the Homelessness Task Force, which in conjunction with a number of other groups looks at the best ways we can provide for the homeless population of Kenosha. And we have a task force that is focused on mass incarceration and reform to our criminal justice system to make it more equitable and more effective for everybody.
In the interests of full disclosure, I want to note that I have been a technical and professional advisor to the Homelessness Task Force, providing some professional assistance to that group.
Thank you, Len. We appreciate your support.
Now, the organization CUSH, Congregations United to Serve Humanity, doesn't operate in a vacuum. You have fraternal relationships with another organization called Wisdom. What is that, and why is that? Dawn?
Sure. Wisdom is our statewide organization. We're a network of 11 affiliates around the state. So we have affiliates in, 11 different counties, including Green Bay, Milwaukee, Madison, Racine County, Waukesha, and on and on.
So that covers some of the big population centers of the state. And what does that group do? Is it a coordinating body, or does it have its own particular political and social agenda?
We all of the affiliates make up the Wisdom Network, so we drive that work. And one of the biggest benefits to me as an organizer is that I get together with the staff from around the state regularly, and we help each other become better organizers. And we think strategically together, and we try to figure out how to build more power for the interfaith movement that we're working in.
I suppose part of your activity is aimed at analyzing and suggesting and promoting legislation. And that would be particularly important for this network, I would imagine, at the state level in working together then.
We're definitely interested in developing relationships with legislators. We talk to them about our issues. We don't spend too much time on particular legislation because we're a 501c3 organization, but they definitely know what we care about, and we have an agenda for sure.
So you take advantage of your opportunity and your responsibility to educate public and legislators about the implications of legislation. Very good. Now, the role of lay people in the organization, you want to talk a little bit about that, Reverend Carlson, and I'll ask Dawn to pick up a little later, Dawn Acne. Reverend Carlson, what is the role of individuals and individual congregations in CUSH?
Well, let's start with the congregations. Member congregations support CUSH initiatives, and they also support monetarily the workings of the CUSH institution. And each member congregation sends representatives to the CUSH board to help with the leadership and kind of the high-level decision-making. Congregations also contribute space and talent and time of their members to the different task forces and are also invaluable in helping us do our public demonstrations and public witness and for advocating for our causes through the legislature and our elected representatives.
Don, and you work with a lot of individuals and the individual task forces, as I understand it. Is that right?
Right.
And how does that happen? How do these people get involved, and how do they accomplish their tasks?
Each congregation has a group of people who are basically a team that works to get to know the people in their congregation. So they're building relationships within the congregation, getting to understand what the people in the congregation care about. They bring those people forward, and we integrate them into task forces based on their interests. And then they, you know, they're trained, and we do, they are the leaders of the issues. They decide the strategy. They carry the workload of, getting our issues addressed.
My observation, and this may be incorrect, so please correct me, is that it's Cush is really a grassroots organization in the old school sense of the term. Is that how you see it, Reverend Carlson?
Absolutely. I think that the most effective societal change happens when the people are in agreement and the people advocate. And it's only through the dedication of our volunteers and our lay leaders and the clergy that we are able to mount any type of unified response to some of these issues that are so pressing to our society at large.
Let's go into some of the detail of some of these issues and talk about the sorts of things that the organization and the lay people involved and the clergy involved are concerned about. Is there anything further we want to talk about on immigration in terms of the concerns on immigration, or have we exhausted those issues for the moment? I know there's many, but I think we've probably hit the top few. Is it the children have been the focus, though, of your activities lately?
Lately.
And the families.
You know, prior to that, we were working on the other things like trying to make sure that people have driver's cards because our legislature changed the law so that people who are undocumented are unable to get driver's licenses. And that makes the roads less safe for everyone. And we live in communities that require pretty much that you have to have a car. And so we worked on that issue for quite a long time. And, of course, we would like to see, you know, Dreamers continue to have status to stay in the United States, legal status, and, comprehensive immigration reform. But we have to take it in small bites. So right now we're focusing on the children.
Well, that's a key in any kind of grassroots organization is to have focus, isn't it, Reverend Carlson?
Yes, but we also have to recognize that a lot of these issues relate to each other and have some areas of intersection, like the Transportation Task Force is concerned with getting access to public transit for folks to travel to and from jobs, reducing the reliance on our citizens on cars. So if you're undocumented and unable to attain a driver's license, you also need public transportation in order to function in the world. So there are a lot of places where our task forces overlap and where the issues are connected to one another.
Well, transportation, certainly, let's stick with that for just a moment. The bus systems in all of our communities in Wisconsin, I think, outside of the very, very largest cities, are spotty, and I don't think you can take a bus in Kenosha on Sunday still and haven't been able to for a long time. So getting to work, if you have a disability, I was handicapped with my knees a while back, and I certainly became very aware of barriers to transportation at that time, and I had trouble with my eyes until I had cataract surgery, and I became very dependent on other people for transportation. What are some of the things that Cush has advocated in terms of the transportation issue to solve some of parts of that problem?
Sure. Several years ago, Cush was successful in retaining Saturday bus service, which is critical to people who work on the weekends. And many of the people who are dependent on bus service do work on weekends, so that was an important win. Since that time, we've been working pretty closely with public transportation, and we've formed some relationships to help us work sort of inside the system to advocate. One of the things we're working on right now is bringing employers to the table because we recognize that it's in their interest. There's a real shortage right now of people who can fill all the positions, and that's just going to continue to grow. So we want to bring employers to the table to help us come up with solutions so that we can really leverage public transportation to grow our local economy so everyone can thrive.
The Homelessness Task Force has been very active. Why don't we talk about that a little bit? And there are some related issues here in terms of transportation for the people who are homeless and affordable housing, too, which isn't a particular task force that you have, but I think that that's a part of the homeless problem. Now, talk a little bit about the homelessness problem. Reverend Carlson, why don't you lead off?
Sure. Well, it's important to note that the Cush congregations helped create and help sustain the Shalom Center, which is a food pantry and shelter for temporarily homeless folks. We also acknowledge that there are several populations of homeless that may or may not be cared for by the current Shalom Center system, namely those who have extreme criminal records and those suffering from debilitating mental illness. So there are a number of things that we look at when we're trying to determine the best way to care for this population. And we understand and recognize that mental health care is one of those things that is important to this population and also something that is lacking in our community.
Don Acne, why don't you continue on that from your standpoint as an organizer?
Yeah, so there's a lot of interest in this issue that was generated last winter because it was the first winter that First Step Services was closed. And so a lot of people wanted to know how are we gonna do something for the people who, you know, at the time were ineligible for the services at Shalom. And since then, our group has been really involved with leadership in the community, from elected officials to agency leaders. And, you know, people stepped up in some really fantastic ways. You know, since that time, Shalom Center has expanded who it serves, and Kenosha Human Development Services helped to train their staff so that they could deal with some of these specialized populations and their needs, because those are much more complex than the people that they were used to dealing with. So we're very grateful for the work that they've done. And in addition to that, Kenosha Human Development Services worked with us and with some of the people who stepped forward and wanted to fund a hotel voucher program for people in an emergency. So the task force is made up of religious leaders and people from the community who care about this issue. And lots of good relationships have been built as a result of that work.
We're here on Community Matters this morning with Cush organizer Don Acne, Congregations United to Serve Humanity organizer Don, and the chair of the Religious Leaders Congregation of Congregations United to Serve Humanity, Reverend Eric David Carlson. Reverend Carlson.
Just to add a little bit about the homeless issue, I definitely want to thank Grace Lutheran. They are a new Cush member congregation, and last winter they responded to the increased need for homeless services by opening a warming welcome center that operates weekly and that is supported by Grace Lutheran, but also volunteers from the other Cush area congregations. And that has been a very helpful program.
And the community has been very helpful, as I understand it, in coming up with donations to provide for food and donations of clothing and so forth. Is that right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Now, mass incarceration is another one of your big topics. Reverend Carlson, do you want to talk to us a little bit about the Restoring Our Communities mass incarceration efforts of Cush? I'm sure it has many facets. Maybe you could give us a broad brush overview and then talk a little bit about some of the facets that Cush is interested in. I know Dawn will join in as well.
Again, this is an issue that has a lot of intersections with the other issues that we try and tackle, from immigration to education to the homelessness issue. Wisconsin has one of the largest populations of incarcerated people per capita and total in the United States. And we're concerned that things like mandatory minimum sentencing and access to legal counsel is affecting our prison population and is preventing people from returning to lives after committing their offenses. This is a much more punitive than rehabilitatory system. And we see recidivism very high in Wisconsin compared to other states. And so there are a number of systemic issues that we try and look at when we consider the mass incarceration problem and the whole problem in our criminal justice system, which tends to disadvantage people of color and those without the economic resources to defend themselves in court.
I was just moderating a primary forum for the Democratic candidates for a sheriff of Kenosha County the other night. And the idea of rehabilitation and continuing education in the prison detention systems was brought up a number of times. So this has been a long time issue in this country and internationally. The balance between punishment and rehabilitation. And this is a very important issue, I'm sure, for the congregations. Dawn, tell us a little bit more about what's going on.
Sure. We're working with, we have a group called EXPO, which is Ex-Incarcerated People Organizing. That group is just getting started within the last year here in Kenosha. And it's a really important thing for the people who are most affected by these issues to have leadership on the things that we do. So we're putting together people who are formerly incarcerated and their families to work as part of this group to lead that task force. We also have sort of a allies and accomplices group called ROC, which is our Restoring Our Communities. And it's about restoring, you know, the people who have committed crimes and been incarcerated and done their time for it to life in the community again. And it's about restoring our whole community to wholeness once they return, because 95% of people who are incarcerated return to our communities. So it's really in our interest to figure out how to help them come back into the community and build a life for themselves. And we don't do ourselves any favors by blocking their access to jobs the way that we have done in the past and continue to do. So that's something we've worked on. Kenosha County and City of Kenosha have taken a step of banning the box, which is the box that asks, do you have a criminal, you know, do you have a felony criminal background that people have to ask on job applications? And just human nature, if you have a stack of applications, the easiest sort to do is to pull the people out who have a criminal background and throw those ones away. So we want to get that off, you know, we wanted to get that off of applications, and we'd really like to see private employers do that too. We want to see people have a chance to get into the workforce because we need workers right now. And so let's give people a chance to have that dignity of work. So that's one area that we're working on.
The box, have I committed a felony or been imprisoned, whatnot, that really is a huge barrier. And it suggests that one mistake cancels the rest of your life. And the societal consequences and the family consequences for that, I take it, are exceptionally troubling to you, Reverend Carlson.
Yes, as are the political consequences. Those who've committed felonies are not able to vote. So one mistake as a, you know, 18-year-old can disenfranchise a person from the democratic process for the rest of his or her life.
And I'm sure you, as I have, met people who have been exactly in those shoes who then are told that the rest of their life is ruined, and then they usually often will make bad choices as a result of that.
Well, we don't give people a lot of options, and that when you take away someone's hope, they don't necessarily make the best choices when they don't have hope.
Anything else that we should be talking about in terms of this mass incarceration issue? The statistic that you cited, Pastor, is pretty scary, that we have per capita one of the highest, if not the highest, incarceration rates in the country. We don't think of Wisconsin as being that dangerous a place, especially me. I'm a native here, but I've lived a substantial part of my life in Chicago and New York City, and it kind of just seems odd and jarring to hear that statistic. Is there any diagnosis or understanding of why the incarceration rate is so high in our state?
Well, truth in sentencing accounts for that. When that law changed, we started incarcerating people, you know, judges no longer had discretion in cases. So that's one of the things.
Truth in sentencing really meant mandatory sentences.
Mandatory minimums.
Mandatory minimums.
Right. So judges don't have discretion. And You know, I think over time, you know, we've seen how that impacts disproportionately populations of people of color. And so we have the highest incarceration rate of Black males and Native males in the world.
Native American?
Here in Wisconsin.
And
yeah.
Black.
Right. Yes.
The highest in the world?
In the world. In the world.
That's astonishing. Now, is it because our laws are particularly strict in Wisconsin?
I think there's unfair treatment all the way through the system.
So it's embedded.
It's institutional. It's systemic, and those are some of the layers that we're trying to peel away to show people who haven't necessarily seen that our whole society operates out of a white frame of reference, and the institutions we have were built by white people for white people, and they advantage white people. And so, you know, the way that our history is, having brought people here involuntarily and then enslaved them, and having basically colonized a land that didn't belong to us, those roots still continue to be reflected in all the institutions and practices that we have.
Yeah, I agree with Dawn. I think we have hundreds of years of history and inertia in our criminal justice system in particular, but really affected, in the last generation or so with the war on drugs that disproportionately targets poor communities and communities of color, and again, the mandatory minimum sentencing, which removes any type of discretion and context from the sentencing process, where a judge is not allowed to look at the other kind of environmental factors when dealing with a sentence, handing down a sentence, especially in nonviolent drug offenses.
It is sort of counterintuitive in a way. We spend all this time and trouble appointing and electing judges who are going to have discretion and intelligence and an understanding of the law, and then we tell them they can't do that. They can't use their intelligence and their discretion and their understanding of the law and their understanding of the case in terms of handing down an appropriate sentence. It's sort of bizarre. We understand that it happened because of a lot of fear that was aroused because of crime, and there was a legislative reaction to that fear, whether it was real or somewhat imagined and stoked up is another question for another day. But now we have a system that's really not effective in terms of the social policies that you would like to see established. Is that pretty much a fair summary?
That's a fair summary. And I think a place that we need to take this is we need people who care about this issue to get involved in voting. A lot of people don't really understand that if you are off paper, which meaning you're no longer on probation or parole, then your voting rights are restored. So we really want people to know that. We want communities who are disproportionately impacted to get out and vote. It's really important in this fall election.
There were some prison ministries in Kenosha and the surrounding communities. Are those still active? Are you aware?
Yeah, there's the Interfaith. I never get the name right. So it's ICDI, and it's a prison ministry where people in the community can be trained to go in and be listeners to people who are incarcerated in Kenosha County.
Before we go on to another topic, I want to delve into your education topic very deeply in a little bit. But I'd like to talk a little bit about the rest of the state once again and how you work together. When you're working on issues like this, do you get together on a state level or on a city-by-city level and exchange information? And how does that take place?
Sure. There are statewide issue campaigns. And because we work together as organizers, and we bring our leadership from across the state together. Our religious leaders and our lay people from our congregations come together regularly on monthly phone calls and then twice a year in face-to-face meetings and at an annual retreat to sort of set the agenda and to get people engaged in particular aspects of different issues, like the criminal justice issue. That's one of our statewide issues. Other statewide issues are transportation and immigration. And just to point out that not every affiliate works on all the same issues. So in Kenosha, we work on education and homelessness, and those issues arise from the community. So we get together and do forums to say, what are the issues that are most concerned with here? And then people, you know, when enough people want to work on an issue, then we start a task force and work on that issue.
And in terms of the transportation issue, was it MICA, Don, that successfully sued the city of Milwaukee to provide for more public transportation as a result of the huge amount of money spent on the I-94 expansion?
Right.
Can you say a little more about that? Because I don't know the details.
So I'm not very well versed on the details there either. And that's one of the things that, you know, so that was really a local issue. As far as statewide transportation issues, we're really concerned with our regional transit authorities. Right now, that doesn't look like something that's very politically popular.
We did have regional transportation authorities at one time.
We did.
Then
we did.
The legislature decided that that was a bad idea for some
reason.
Right.
And the reason we need those is so that we can have consistent funding. Because right now, when the legislature changes, you know, and it's a new administration, funding can go up or down. So communities can't, you know, keep transportation at very high levels.
How do you
with
budget
those
that?
Right. How do you budget that? And you know, so having the RTA would allow, it's a regional taxing authority, basically, so that each region can then decide how much funding they need for transportation, and then they can tax for it in a way that, you know, makes sense. So,
and the needs are very different in various parts of this great large state, which is so diverse.
They are.
In terms of its industry and economic aspects.
Right, and we're really reliant right now on the, you know, biennial budget process and, you know, state, and then there's local match too. So the funding, state funding has been going down and down and down because we've had, you know, skyrocketing investment in highway expansion, which is based on really old data and about projections for highway use and all that. And so we'd really like to see some of that money that we're borrowing for highway expansion go back into local communities for transportation and roads.
Reverend Carlson, I haven't asked you previously about your experience outside of Kenosha, but I know you have a knowledge about what goes on outside in the rest of the world. From your standpoint and your life experience, how unique is the work of Cush and Wisdom in this state? Do you find that it's very impressive? Do you find it's less than you've encountered elsewhere? Do you think it's we're leaders in this field, or is this a movement that you see in every state in every large community?
Well, just to back up, I'm relatively new to Kenosha. I've been here about 2 years now, serving Bradford Community Church, and prior to that, I was in rural Illinois, and I was part of an interfaith group there that was really focused only on maintaining and supporting a food pantry. Now, that population was pretty homogeneous, pretty rural, and didn't have some of the population density issues that we have here in Kenosha, and didn't have some of the justice issues just because there weren't a whole lot of people there. Prior to that, though, I served three congregations in New Orleans immediately post Katrina. And that was a real education in faith leaders coming together because there were no other options. And it wasn't the government that was rebuilding New Orleans and still isn't. It's the churches and the faith communities. So I really got a good experience, some good experience working with people with very different faith traditions and views as my own for the greater good. So I would say we're probably somewhere in between the immediacy of the interfaith work in New Orleans post-Katrina and where I was in Illinois for the 6 years prior to my assignment here. So we're kind of in the middle of the road, but I think we're doing some very good work, and it's work that needs to be done.
I was in New Orleans recently for a professional meeting, and we took a tour led by housing development specialists and the faith community of the areas devastated by the hurricane. And there's still a lot of work to be done there, but we saw some amazing things that that group had put together. It's interesting that you have some experience there.
Yeah.
I'd love to talk with you more about that in the future. Now, let's go to education. That has been a long-time interest of CUSH, as I understand it. What aspects of education? Education is such a broad topic. What is it? What are some of the topics you're looking at within that, and maybe what's your top focus in the next year or two, Dawn?
So the Education Task Force is really focused on getting neighborhood schools to have some of the same advantages that some schools out in the suburbs might have. The kids in some of these high-poverty schools have suffered lots of trauma. They come from a lot of poverty, and they have more challenges to bring to the table. And so in those kinds of situations, they need more resources. So we want to see that happen, and so we're looking for different ways to do that. One of the ways that we started to work was in getting mental health professionals into the schools. And as we were starting to work on that and explore it and, you know, look at other communities that were doing it, we discovered that Kenosha Unified was already working on that. So to their credit, they have mental health professionals already in 5 schools and plan to expand that. We've also gotten involved with...
So you're being supportive of that effort and encouraging people to understand it and want to be able to fund it, I'm sure.
Absolutely. And one of the places where we were able to make a little bit of a difference was to say, let's intervene earlier. So we asked them to intervene at the elementary school level, and they did do that. There is mental health support in the elementary schools now. So that's, you know, we're also working with the Building Our Future group. Our role is kind of as the watchdog in that group to make sure that there is representation from underrepresented groups at the table and that there's a voice to call out when that's not happening, because we certainly don't want to create solutions that we impose upon populations of people. We want them at the table creating the solutions with us.
Reverend Carlson, you want to expand a little bit on education task force and those issues from your perspective and that of the religious leaders?
Well, just broadly, I can say my wife was a Wisconsin state educator for 15 years and retired in 2010. And she worked in the Whitewater Public Schools. And from her own experience, she saw a marked difference when they reduced the maximum class size at her school from, I think it was 30 at one point, down to 20. And she was an art teacher and part of the teachers' union prior to the collective bargaining legislation that happened in 2010 and in 2011. And she said that it was a huge difference. And one of the things that I think generally we want to advocate for is smaller class sizes, a higher teacher-to-student ratio. And, you know, looking at our urban schools, they have much higher populations and they have a much higher class size on average than our suburban schools, which may have the same resources available. But when you have 30, 35 kids in a classroom, the quality of the education, the quality of the care just can't be the same as when you have 20 or 22 in a classroom.
Does CUSH have any interest in the gun issue within the schools? Has CUSH been involved with that at all here?
We've done, you know, of course we've done some prayer vigils around that. We haven't done any direct work with it, but our Religious Leaders Caucus has been responding to the gun issue, so I'll let Eric talk about that.
Yes, so you can't separate the issue of guns in the schools from the issue of guns in our society. And we have, in this country, had a long-standing tradition of arming our citizens. And while that may have been okay a couple hundred years ago, where the average gun could fire once every 3 minutes and was accurate maybe to 20 yards, the military technology that we have access to now means that those guns are infinitely more dangerous than we ever could have conceived when we signed the Second Amendment in the 1780s.
It's an interesting analysis. Go on.
Well, I guess my point is that we regulate everything in this society that could be dangerous. You need, not only do you need to go through a class and pass a test and carry insurance to drive a car, you have to renew your license periodically. You have to take eye tests. You have to take hearing tests. You have to be able to read street signs. And we don't have anything on, you know, on the same level for gun ownership. And that's just in general a concern. The other concern is the availability of weapons in the marketplace, and not regulating things like ammunition. So there are any number of issues that contribute to having way too, in my opinion, way too many guns available. And invariably, there are going to be, when you have that many weapons available, there are going to be issues anytime there are vulnerable populations. And we know that our kids and our schools are vulnerable to those type of issues.
This has been very interesting to see what a manifold set of ideals that the CUSH organization, Congregations United to Serve Humanity, and your brotherly and sisterly organizations in the surrounding counties of Racine and Walworth and the rest of the state, everyone is involved to a greater or lesser degree. It's really quite impressive. So as you look forward, as you hope and pray for the future of Congregations United to Serve Humanity and the clergy and the lay people involved, Reverend Carlson, where would you like to see see the organization go? What are your hopes for the health and future of CUSH and these kinds of organizing religious-led efforts?
Well, beyond just progress in each of the areas that we focused on, I would like us to foster a larger sense of community and individual responsibility to our society. I think we are living in a very divided time where people are, you know, on one side of an issue or another. And we believe, and certainly in CUSH and certainly at my congregation, we believe that we all have a part of the truth. We all have the right to be treated with respect and listened to, and that ultimately, all of our needs and values are much more common than they are disparate, and we need to figure out more ways we can work together on those things we agree on and less time worrying about those few details that we don't agree with.
Thank you very much. My guests this morning on Community Matters have been Dawn Ankeny, an organizer for Congregations United to Serve Humanity, based here in Kenosha, and the chair of the Religious Leaders Caucus of CUSH, Reverend Eric David Carlson, who's also the minister at Bradford Community Church Unitarian Universalist. For Community Matters, this is Len Iaquinta, as always, encouraging you to get informed and get involved. Good day.
You've been listening to Community Matters. All programs are archived at WGTD.org. Click shows. This is WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. Support comes from Kenosha Harbor Market, featuring soap and bath product vendors, including Anointed Body Care, The Cottontail Shop, Genesis 950, The Green Goat Apothecary, Perennial Soaps, Pure Bliss Artisan Soap, Serenity Soap Works, and Soap of the Earth.
Support for WGTD comes from Piasecki Althouse. Since 1931, Piasecki Althouse has provided unmatched, compassionate service and are dedicated to your family, guests, and supporting the community. Piasecki Althouse Funeral Home, honoring personal legacies and the circle of life. 262-658-4101.
Support for WGTD comes from Lemon Street Gallery. The Art Blast is coming to Lemon Street for young adults 13+. Fun and exciting sessions featuring pottery, painting, and assemblage. Mondays through Fridays, July 30th through August 2nd from 1 to 5 p.m. Call 605-4745 for more. From the WGTD Arts and Other Events calendar, Parkside kicks off their summer foreign film series in July featuring a trio of films, Faces, Places, After Image, and The Square. Admission is $5 per showing, tickets only available at the door. Visit uwp.edu.
Entwine the desert song. Call.